One of the most important concepts, excuse me, my allergies are rampant tonight. One of the most central concepts in theology is the concept of mystery. Now, before you use that concept, and I'm going to be using it in terms of Christmas, I want to make sure that we understand what it does not mean. Because when we use the word mystery, we generally apply it to something that can be solved. So, for example, if you hear of or buy yourself a mystery novel, the mystery is usually whodunit. But as soon as you find out who done it, the mystery is solved. So the mystery is over. In theology, when you have the word mystery, it's not used in that sense. It's used in the sense of a reality of such depth that there is no end to its understanding. Sometime when I was in graduate school, some people called it a reality that is incomprehensible. But I once had a professor who gave it a little twist, which made it much better. And then he said, mystery is basically infinite comprehensibility. Now just think of that. Infinite comprehensibility. The more you understand, the more you understand that there's more to understand. Okay? And so it's infinitely comprehensible. The incarnation of our Lord is a mystery. Mystery questions abound. Why? Why did God take that route? Why did he choose where he chose his son to be born? Why at that moment? What did it mean? What does it mean that God became fully man and yet was fully God? And we can go on and on and on with that. I say this because I want to focus in on bringing Christmas, the mystery of Christmas, bringing it to our minds in one particular way, remembering that there are infinite different ways of doing this. The way I would like to bring it to us is by using a Christmas song. My favorite Christmas song of all time, which is O Holy Night. Now, I'm not going to use the whole song because, frankly, the whole song isn't my favorite. My favorite is the opening and the first verse. And I want you to, I've already made a deal with the choir, and they sang it pre-Mass. But I want you to listen to it, especially looking at specific words and letting your mind go in those specific words. For example, the word pining, to pine. And then the soul felt its worth. I'm not going to go on with that. Just listen to that. Pay attention to the theology, remember what theology means, okay? Those of you who go to Mass here regularly know that I am a bit of a nut when it comes to etymologies, okay? Theology is logos, meaning reason, and theo, meaning God. So theology is reasoned understanding of God, okay? So use your head, and I want you to go behind the romanticism of the song and see if we can begin to squeeze some of the juice out of that romantic, as much as beautiful as it is, because it is a gorgeous song, but you can really appreciate it on an emotional level and on a musical level, but also get a little deeper into the theological level. So, Maestro. Thank you. Beautifully done. Now let's go into the song and what it actually is saying. O holy night, the stars are brightly shining. The very first thing, it's already telling you that this night is different. It's different than other nights. Not cosmologically, because cosmologically it's pretty much like every other night. But something is happening this night that makes this night different from all other nights. O holy night. The norm, the stars are brightly shining. They do that every night. Why is it holy? Because it's the night of the dear Savior's birth. The world doesn't know it yet. They don't know what's happening. But it is the night of his birth. Now listen to the next sentence. The next sentence goes into why this is such an important night. And it goes to the need of this night. Now why do I say to the need of this night? One of my long-standing burrs or beefs or whatever you want to call it, point of contention, not contention, but anyway, is that this whole notion of being saved. I've always found that a bit overused. It's correct, but it is a bit overused. God knows how many people come up to you and say, "Are you saved?" The problem is, saved from what? See, when I was in high school, I had nuns, and they were tough. And the nuns would teach us all about Jesus, and I went to Catholic schools all the way through. And I still remember being told that Jesus saved me. Well, I thought that was very nice of him. Very nice. But I couldn't figure out, save me from what? I was perfectly fine. And they said, God loved me. Well, that's nice. My mommy did too. So what? And you don't make sense of it. But then you begin to get slapped in the face with reality. And love. I work with teenagers a lot. And I get a big kick out of them. Because they think they're on top of it. And oh my God, do they not know what's coming at them? It's called life. And it does a job on you. But I still remember, I was one of those teenagers. I thought that religion was very nice, very nice. But I didn't get it. Didn't get it at all. I often use this example, and some of those of you who go to Mass here know that the example I use is that, you know, if you're swimming in a swimming pool and you're having a great time and the lifeguard comes over to you and swims over to you and says, "I'm here to save you." You say, "Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. But you're fine. You don't need to be saved." But if 10 minutes later, you've gotten paralyzed and you're starting to drown and the same dude jumps in or lady jumps in and comes over to you and says, "I'm here to save you." That's the best news you've heard. Why? Because you haven't figured out that you're drowning yet. Long lay the world in sin and error pining. Have you ever looked up the word pining? It's a very interesting word. I looked it up right before we started Mass. It means to yearn deeply with suffering and longing, to long painfully, to fail gradually from grief and regret. Now, long lay the world in sin and error pining. You see, the ancient world was a world, how do I describe it? It was a very dangerous world. It's not a world in which we are used to living. I often like to imagine myself taking a time travel machine back into, let's say, ancient Rome or ancient Greece. And I always like to imagine, you know, going maybe, or to have somebody go up with me and they go up like to a Roman emperor and with a complaint. And you say to the Roman emperor, I feel victimized. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to say, yes, and we like it. We enjoy seeing you suffer. As a matter of fact, we built an amphitheater just to watch you. And we like to develop all kinds of different ways for you to die and to suffer. It's fun. You see, in the ancient world, there was no respect for individual human life. There was no individual human dignity. You did, your body was not yours, wasn't even God's. It belonged to the emperor or to whoever happened to be in charge. The world was ruled by slavery, by greed, prostitution. There were bright lights periodically, but few. Socrates, probably the Buddha, and others that were in different places. But the world felt like a merry-go-round, going fast, nowhere. And when you thought about the gods, you know the funniest thing you could have ever told somebody in the ancient world? That God is love. They would have laughed you out of the theater. And why? Because the ancient gods were made in the image and likeness of human beings. They were projections of human beings. Now, if you have a human being who is particularly precarious, how do you make that being happy with you? Well, you give him gifts. You make him happy. You like my gift to you? You like it? And of course, the gift better not be cheap. The God better know that it's a pretty important gift. In fact, they want what's most important to you. And since those days, they didn't have iPhones and Apple Watches and stuff like that. The thing that was most important to you was people. The people you loved. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but in the ancient world, human sacrifice was normal. Because you wanted to give the gods things and gifts that they would enjoy. And how do you get a gift up to God? Well, you kill it. And then you burn it and the smoke goes up and you sprinkle the blood on people. If you were to have gone to church in the ancient world, the church would have been a temple and you would have been walking probably with blood covered up to your toes. Because not only humans, but animals were being sacrificed constantly. Even Mary and Joseph, if you remember, when they bring Jesus to the temple, they bring two turtle doves. They didn't bring them to have them fly off in a sort of a romantic notion. They brought them to be killed. They brought them to be sacrificed. Long lay the world in sin and error pining. If you live in that world, You live with not much hope. You live empty. You live like you were living in a merry-go-round. You feel it's moving, but it's not going anywhere. It's not doing anything. Life was short and brutal. Even medicine was short and brutal. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, longing for something, something to pull people out of that estate, somebody to save them, somebody to give them rescue from the bitterness of human life. Long lay the world in sin and error. Pining is the operative word. And then it comes, till he appeared, and the soul felt its worth. Now listen to that. Why the soul felt its worth? I get a big kick out of people when I talk politics, because most people don't realize that at the core, Western civilization is a Christian civilization. I don't care how much you reject it. It always amazes me that people, when they study the history of ideas, don't understand how to get to the root. Just one example. The Declaration of Independence. I always get a big kick out of that. Because, by the way, the Constitution is a secondary. If you remember the Constitution starts out by saying, we, the people of the United States, in order to create a more perfect union. There was already a union. They just wanted to make it more perfect. Right? And so where did that first union begin? Because it was already there. They wanted to perfect it. But now, more perfect union. Well, where did that union start? It started in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths. Who's we? Who's we? Well, we is the people who hold these truths together. That all men are created equal. Where'd they get that? I wonder. Where'd they get all that stuff about the human dignity and rights? Till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. You see, when he appears, it's when we become aware of how much we matter. How much we matter, each one of us. All of a sudden, the individual has a meaning and a purpose. All of a sudden, the light has come into the world. And so, the song goes on, fall on your knees. Let me see it, because I got lost. Till he appear this love, a thrill of hope, a weary world rejoices. Get that. A weary world. The world is tired. Tired of what? Tired of living. A weary world rejoices. For yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. The morning is just breaking open. It's just dawn. And slowly the light comes into the world. You notice all these little lights, and when you go home, you're going to see all the little lights. People just think it's fun. But you know where those lights are? All those lights are little ways of recalling the light that came into the world that night. Most people don't even know it, but that's what's happening. And then it says, fall on your knees. You know why fall? Why it doesn't say kneel? It says fall because when you see something you weren't expecting and it's of such great news, your knees get weak. You fall on your knees when you hear the angel voices, something, a good news that you weren't expecting. O night divine, O holy night. So tonight when you go home, and tomorrow, when maybe the presents are being opened, Just remember what the greatest gift was. The greatest gift was life the way we have it. Even in our screwed up world today, a world in which we all are, you know, impeaching here and there and, you know, persecuting people here and there. And it's a screwed up world. But it's a lot better. And we are, when Jesus said to us, you are the light of the world. You are the little lights. And if you don't live to be one of those little lights, the world will continue in sin and error pining. Because you are a reflection of Him. And so, when we finish tonight, and I finish by saying Merry Christmas, I'm not talking about the fact that you got a new microwave. I'm not talking about the new toaster or the jewel you got. I'm talking about the fact that you have received a gift that is so far beyond what you ever expected that you have no way to categorize it. And if you were to even understand it a little bit, your knees would go weak and you would fall. So, Merry Christmas.